Hello, and welcome back to the Existential Echo Chamber podcast. As promised, I am now going to be conducting interviews. As promised, we're going to be talking more about pop culture and things that have nothing to do with, history of religion and philosophy and things like that. I promised I would have people in studio with me. I'm delighted to have one of my closest friends who was also my co-creator and co-host back in the day of my now defunct Deny That to Africa podcast that I have mentioned before.
It's coming back.
Deny That to Africa may indeed be reborn in some form or another.
Probably under a better name.
Yeah. Or we may just, who knows? We may just start bringing you great Deny That to Africa content here on a semi-regular basis. So if you hear me laughing, it's because my guest today is occasionally showing me funny memes. I'm also occasionally getting emails. I wish I could tell you that it's from listeners. It's not.
Not yet. That'll happen soon.
Right. But so this is the first interview that I've done. This is my Joe Rogan moment. So so go easy on me. You see where he ended up though, kids.
$100 million
deal with Spotify. That's money moves, as the kids right? say. So my guest today, do you wish me to reveal your true name, your true identity, or do you want me to go by
a pseudonym? Yeah, sure, go ahead. I don't have any words out from my
So my first guest for the Existential Echo Chamber podcast is one of my really, really good friends. Is somebody I've known for a long time. Went to college together. We worked together.
11 years?
About 11 now. Years now. A friendship, which nowadays, you should know that if I've been friends with someone for more than a decade in these trying times, they must be a real one. So this is my good buddy, Logan Chase Fagan.
Hello.
And we're going to be talking about Superman and comic book movies and all the things from the last decade that
and what a time to talk about this stuff
yes
right now,
what right? what a time in light of the Snyder Cut. We're going to get into that. So because this is my very first crack at doing interviews, I want you guys to know my format is always going to be my first two questions are going to be about religion and politics.
Stay on brand.
Yeah. So we're going to, to stay on brand. We're going to get those out of the way first. And then we're going to talk about whatever the guest wants to talk about. And so after conferring with Logan, we figured it would be cool if he could talk about the things that he's passionate about, one of which is Superman. And then the other is like comic movies, pop culture in general. He's a wealth of pop culture and comic book knowledge. So we'll talk about lots of stuff. So, without further ado, Logan, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
If you'd like to make an opening statement, the way that we're going to do this is because I'm poor right now, we have to pass the mic to one another.
Gotcha.
So I'll ask questions, I'll hand you the mic, or swivel the mic to you, as it were, and then you are free to, as long as you speak up, we will have no mic issues.
Gotcha.
So you should have zero mic issues as long as we, kind of...
Let me move my lunch out of the way. This is horrible podcasting. But,
yeah, this is terrible podcasting. But, we're growing. We are growing whippersnappers.
I don't think anyone would use that word to describe us nowadays. I think we're both approaching what people refer to as over the hill.
Yeah, probably so.
So, would you like me to say a little bit about myself?
Yeah, tell us who you are. Tell us tell us what you want to tell the people. What you are willing to tell the people of how you know me.
Like you said, my name's Logan Fagan. Logan Chase Fagan for the initiated. We've been friends about 11 years. Met at Gordon College during about 2009. Wonderful times. Both theater majors. To peel the curtain back, I realized that we were going to be good friends when you were talking to to other people about something about reptilians and aliens, and Paul McCartney might actually be a reptile or some other crazy conspiracy theory. And I look over from what I'm doing in our stagecraft class, and I'm like, reptilians, you mean like the ones from that TV show V that comes on Fox that I'm pretty sure is going to get canceled relatively soon? Right. And you were like, yeah, exactly. And I was like, all right, yeah, we're gonna be friends. And then hung out some, started working together at the movie theater, and honestly, I feel like there could be an entire podcast on the trajectory of our friendship, but let's save that for another day, I guess. Let's get into it. What exactly did you bring me here to ask me, old buddy?
Well, the first question that I ask all my victims, I mean my guests, we had to get a dad joke in there somewhere. My first question that I would like to ask you is, in keeping, staying on brand of this podcast, what, if any, affiliation do you have with faith, religion, things of God, and how much or how little does it influence your life? Anything you would like to share about that? That I like giving people a platform to talk about these big picture ideas. Maybe they never talk about it. So this is a chance. And if you have no thoughts, feelings, or opinions whatsoever, then that's fine too. I suspect a lot of my guests will be apathetic and a lot of them will be devout. So would love to know what your thoughts are.
excuse me. Okay, so I consider myself Christian. I was born and raised in the Seventh-day Adventist Church. Went to church pretty much every Saturday growing up. I don't go as often now, mainly because I don't consider myself to be a quote-unquote religious person. I think I'm more spiritual than anything else. Also, I have a job that makes it very hard to get off of work on the weekends, so no time for church or anything like that. I don't know, it's weird. Like, I don't have any preconceived, like, ideas. I don't try to understand the workings of God and all of that. I'm kind of just like, I mean, he's up there, he's doing his thing. If I'm supposed to understand anything going on, I will. If not, that's cool. It's probably a lot less stressful that I don't understand the inner workings of higher deities and stuff like that. I feel like I would wind up like the Nazis from Indiana Jones with their faces melting off when they open the Ark of the Covenant. It's not meant for me. I also think that, you know, there might be something involving aliens up there. I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. Honestly, I try to live my life as in, like, I try to be a decent person, and I figure that's got to be good enough for the big guy upstairs.
Okay, fair enough. So we're not, definitely not ruling out ancient astronaut theory. I like
not
it.
Not at all. Not
like
at
it.
All.
I like it. That's a great television show. Have you seen any of that great television show?
I've seen bits and pieces whenever I'm surfing through TV and I come across the History Channel like at 3 o'clock in the morning. There's always something about aliens on there. It's kind of weird, actually.
People call that pseudo-history, and I call them pseudo-boring. So my next question is going to be in the political spectrum.
All right.
What, if any, party affiliation do you claim? And if no party affiliation, what political philosophy, if any, do you espouse? And are there any principles about your politics that you cling to or hold to or consider sacred principles that about how you guide your life, regardless of affiliation with organized politics?
Okay, so to peel the curtain back a little bit more, by the time this is over, there's going to be no curtain left. I don't really consider myself to be a political person per se. I try to pay attention to what's going on just because I feel like you should at least be educated. I don't belong to the Republican or Democratic parties. If anything, I would say I'm more libertarian in mind than anything else. There are a lot of things that the Democrats say that I agree with. There are a lot of things that the Republicans say that I agree with. And the Libertarian Party is the closest thing that meets what I feel like is the weird middle ground that I'm in. I don't know. I take the Constitution seriously, but I don't really want to get into all of that because I feel like the moment I start speaking about the Constitution or the First, Second, and all of the other amendments, it's going to be a conversation that never ends with people, and I'd rather just not do that because, like I said, I'm not a political person, and I'd rather talk about things like comics, movies, TV shows, aliens, the impending heat death of the universe. I don't know.
Fair enough, fair enough. I only have one brief follow-up to that. Just yes or no. Bernie Sanders.
No. No, not at all.
All right. So, moving on.
I'm sure he's a nice man. I don't agree with a lot of the things he says, but I try not to judge the people that do, because not everybody's going to be exactly the same, and that's what makes this country so great. That was the most political politician answer I could ever get. Fagan 2032.
All right. Fair enough. Fair enough. All right. Moving into the fun stuff. So let's just dive right in. Tell us who your favorite, we may have spoiled this, but tell us who your favorite comic book character of all time is. Tell us why. Tell us a little bit about your relationship to that character.
I'd have to say that my favorite comic book character of all time would be Aqualad. specifically the Garth version. No, I'm joking. Honestly, my favorite comic book character of all time is Superman. He's honestly the first comic character that I have any, like, memory of ever seeing. And that's mainly because back in 1993, man, that makes me feel old to say, I used to watch the Lois and Clark New Adventures of Superman TV show starring Dean Cain and Terry Hatcher with my Aunt Leslie every Sunday night on ABC. And I don't know, there's just something about the character that I find to be inspiring. Like, I think there's something really great about there being a character who just does the right thing because it is the right thing to do. I know a lot of people find that to make him a boring character these days. To those people, I would say you don't really understand the character, but whatever, it's fine. And after watching all, I think, 4 seasons of Lois and Clark, I started reading comic books. My uncle gave me his comic book collection a couple of years after that. It had the Death of Superman graphic novel, Reign of the Superman. I read that multiple times for years. And then I want to say there was the Superman animated series, which honestly wasn't a huge fan of it just because it was okay, but it wasn't my cup of tea. Loved the Justice League cartoon. And then I want to say sometime around middle school, what used to be known as Warner Brothers Television, which is now the CW, they started showing this TV show called Smallville about the life of a young Clark Kent. I believe that was 2001. And for the next decade, I watched that show religiously, no matter what day they changed it to coming on. I was always there, 8 o'clock, introduced me to a lot of other interesting characters like Green Arrow, Black Canary, and that type of stuff. And then we got Superman Returns, which that was the thing. Truthfully, I don't hate that movie. I love Brandon Routh. He's about the only thing I do like about that movie. So yeah, Superman, favorite. That's probably why. I also love the relationship between him and his adoptive parents, Martha and Jonathan, mainly because they're just two people who found this random baby that it crashed from the stars and were like, he doesn't have anybody else, so let's take care of him.
So I have two controversial follow-ups to the Superman question.
Okay.
All right, number one, I think you're going to be able to pick up what I'm about to put down. So number one, what do you say to the critics who say that in today's day and age, Superman is just too OP, there's just too much. And they're basically what they're boiling down to, their philosophy that they're asking the Superman fans, ostensibly, is should there be a Superman? How do you respond to that philosophical query about whether there should be a Superman?
Should there be a Superman? Yes. Yes, there should be. If for no other reason, then there always needs to be that one character who is the shining example and beacon of what people could be. I feel like you can't have characters like Batman, who are, and don't get me wrong, I love Batman, but Batman's character is that of, like, brooding, darkness, vengeance. You can't have those characters exist without someone to keep them from going as far down the rabbit hole as they could go. Because I feel like, at least with Batman, if there's no Superman, then there's no one for Bruce Wayne to look at and be like, okay, I can't do this because Clark wouldn't do this. There always needs to be that, for lack of a better phrase, Jesus-type character that you would ask, what would they do in this situation? Which, if you know anything about the history of Superman, Superman is very messianic-type character in pop culture.
Yeah, like, originally in the comics, Superman, created by Jews, he's a Moses figure. Of course, there are obvious literary parallels in the gospel narratives about Jesus to the Moses story. Those were intentional parallels from the gospel writers, particularly in Matthew. But also, we know that Richard Donner intentionally tweaked those a bit to where they are Christ parallels.
Yes.
So definitely, in the last 40 years or so, Superman is a representative of Jesus in many ways of
which
the Messiah.
Snyder nailed home in those movies.
Speaking, I'm glad you brought up Zack Snyder. So,
real quick, and going back to the whole OP thing, I would argue that you're not OP when you're the first comic book character and the powers are directly correlative to the type of threats he takes on, but whatever.
That is an incredibly fair point. Superman came first, so he gets to have the powers, and he does indeed have to face characters that other comic book characters would probably die if they came up against. So he needs those powers. That's fair. That's a fair point. So another thing...
I'm saying Animal Man doesn't take on the type of threat Superman does, and if he did, Animal Man would die more than he usually does.
I would like to point out that I ask this question because my favorite scene in Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice is when the senator is asked, should there be a Superman? And she says, there is.
Yes.
So, you know, the question is not should we have such a character. Look, we have this character. Now we got to grapple with him. It's just like with Jesus. Should there be a Jesus? Well, there is a Jesus, and we do have to grapple with that figure. We can't just sweep him under the rug and say he doesn't exist.
I also think that if you take Superman out, like if Superman didn't exist, for better or for worse, the world itself, and I'm talking about the real world, would be a much drastically different place. Like, Superman was created in the 1940s during World War II. He's as much a part of American culture and the culture of the world as, like, well, at least for America, as, like, apple pie or the 4th of July. Like, there's a reason Superman's S-shield is one of the most recognizable symbols in the world. It's just a part of what the world is, I guess I'm saying. But continue on, good friend.
I agree with you. So I would say that my next question is kind of a follow-up. You were talking a little bit about Zack Snyder. And what, I guess it's several questions rolled into one. So what is your, what are your thoughts and feelings about Superman in this sort of postmodern era. The Superman, not so much of the comics, but mm-hmm. the Superman of the Snyderverse as portrayed by Henry Cavill. How do you feel about Man of Steel? How do you feel about Dawn of Justice, Justice League, all that kind of stuff? How do you feel about the trajectory of that character? How do you feel about the reception of that character at large in the world? And how do you feel about the future of the character in film and storytelling? And do you think that we've seen the last of Henry Cavill? Or do you think that's going to get redeemed? You can talk about the Snyder Cut. Do you feel that it even needs an atonement? You know, much like Keira Knightley in that movie. Just tell us how you feel about how Superman has been portrayed on film over the last decade or so.
Okay, well, let me start off by saying that's a very complex question, which is going to have a very complex answer. Okay, so first of all, let me just say, I am a fan of the Zack Snyder DC movies. Partly because I am a huge Zack Snyder fan, so there might be somewhat of a bias going into that. However, I think Zack did a great job of portraying what a modern Superman would look like. First and foremost, this Superman is not the mild-mannered, humble Christopher Reeves Superman, and there's nothing wrong with that version of Superman. I love the Christopher Reeve movies, except for 3 and 4. Those should never have been made. Richard Pryor should not be a bad guy in anything, and Superman throwing nuclear weapons into the sun and then a radioactive supervillain beating him up is nonsense. I was about to cuss, but I wasn't sure if this is family-friendly or not.
Feel free, and, you know, consider this your sensitive ears warning if you don't want to hear language.
Sweet.
So 3, 2, 1, and you can go ahead and mute for a few seconds.
Okay, Superman 4 is the quest for bullshit. That movie is horrible, but that's not what we're here for. Okay, so I understand people's problems with the Zack Snyder Superman. It is not the Superman that people think should be Superman. However, I argue that there is a very obvious trajectory that the character is taking, so that by the time you get to what should have been Justice League, you're seeing the actual Superman that everybody knows and loves. I also think that, like, because as you know, people have issues with how Jonathan Kent was portrayed in Man of Steel, where young Clark, played by Dylan Sprayberry of Teen Wolf fame. It's a nice catch there. Yeah, it's the way my brain works. Young Clark asked Jonathan, "What was I supposed to do? Let them die?" And Jonathan goes, "I don't know, maybe." Now, yes, we all know that the Jonathan of the comic books, of the Richard Donner movies, and more than likely the John Schneider version of Jonathan Kent probably would not have said that. However, I don't judge it too harshly because it is a more realistic version of Jonathan Kent. And at that point, yes, he knows that his son can do amazing things and that if he does indeed have great power, those do come with great responsibility. But first and foremost, he's a parent. He's Clark's parent. And the job of a parent is to protect their child. So even if they can do something, you have to take into account that just because you can do something, is that wonderful line from Jurassic Park, just because you can doesn't necessarily mean you should, at least not until now. Once Clark is an adult, if he had lived that long, Jonathan would be 100% proud of his son for stepping out into the limelight and saving the world and doing what he was sent here to do. But at the time, he's a teenager, and it would have been completely irresponsible for Clark to do that, because if anyone knew what he could do, people would have shown up and taken him away, and there's nothing that they could have done, and at that point, Clark wasn't mature enough to deal with what would have come from that. But as an adult, he can then step out, be the man he needs to be, and don't get me wrong, I agree that the way they handled the death of Jonathan Kent in Man of Steel probably wasn't the best, because you can't tell me that Superman couldn't have, like, zipped to go save Jonathan real quick, brought him back, or, like, run him off somewhere down the road and then been back in the blink of an eye. Like, you Superman, come on. You constantly get into foot races with the Flash. Go save your daddy. But it is what it is. So this is it's a more realistic take on the character. Also, the other big problem people have with the Zack Snyder movies, I think, is the neck snap heard around the world at the end of the movie where Superman literally just snaps the neck of General Zod to stop him from killing those innocent bystanders who, I would argue, that they could have ducked underneath the laser beams and run away. But whatever. Yes. Did I want General Zod to die? No. Did they write themselves into a corner at that point that was the only way to deal with that character? Yes. Because there was no way to get him back into the Phantom Zone, because all the other Kryptonians were already there, and that means of sending them there had been destroyed. And you set yourself up with the impossible task of General Zod then going, this only ends one of two ways, either you die or I do. And he said he'll never stop coming and he was going to destroy the world. So, yes, Clark snapped his neck. I think the problem that people have with that is that they confuse Batman and Superman of both having a do not kill rule, which Batman specifically has a I won't kill rule. The movies seem to always ignore that, but in the comics, Batman does have a rule to where he does not kill. Superman, to my knowledge, has killed on two separate occasions, both of which it was the only thing he could do. Superman is not going out killing all of his supervillains, mainly because most of his villains are just people with superpowers or random Kryptonians that keep showing up even though he's supposed to be the last son. He has killed General Zod in the comic books when, in a parallel universe, Zod, Non, and Feyora, or Ursa, I don't remember which one, killed literally that entire universe, and the only thing Superman could do was don a lead suit and kill them all with slow kryptonite poisoning. Did what he had to do. He felt horrible for doing it, and I also think that ties into later on him telling Bruce that he can't kill the Joker after the Joker blows Jason Todd to Kingdom Come. And then he also killed Doomsday in the comics, which they then retcon to say that you can't kill Doomsday. I don't know. Comics are very convoluted and it's tough to keep up with. But I think people just, for the most part, need to chill and realize that, like, just because it's not the version of the character you like doesn't make it any less valid. Because considering comics are an ever-evolving art form and there's no one true definitive version of any character. The version of Superman that showed up when he first created is nothing like the version of the character that's in comic books now. So,
yeah, that's a fair point. Also, I always like to bring up about the next snap controversy. It was day one on the job. It's his first day.
That's very true. That is the first day he was Superman.
He was dealing with a lot, you know, like,
you know, Zod had shown up to his farm and threatened to kill his mama. He responded by being the good loving farm boy he is by giving Zod them hands.
What do you say about the? It's not just that there was controversy about Man of Steel, and then later there was controversy over Dawn of Justice, and we're gonna get to that. But what do you feel about that? There was a sort of inter-film, like in between film controversy, where for some reason people really came down hard on Zack Snyder and by extension his version of the Superman character because of the destruction of Metropolis in the final fight sequence. How do you respond to those people? Keeping in mind that this film came out in the shadow of the Avengers, which featured a similar sequence. Why do you think that...
And the Transformers movies.
Like, why do you think that there was such a backlash to that? And how do you think that that particular controversy got addressed in the follow-up film? Was it addressed to you satisfactorily for you? And do you think objectively it was addressed in a in any meaningful way.
Okay. Oh, man. First, let me just say this. Sometimes I feel like I go on tirades, so let me apologize if it seems like I'm rambling, but that's just the way my mind works. I go from one place to another. But as far as the destruction of Metropolis, as we've said, it was day damn one of the job. It is not a seasoned Superman that, like, would steer the fight clear of people and stuff like that. Like, this is literally a Superman who has never been Superman before. It's like showing up to a new job and being like, all right, so, okay, case in point, we used to work at the movie theater. My first day was Twilight Breaking Dawn Part 1.
Which was super busy.
Yes, I would argue that was probably a horrible day for me to start. I got thrown into the thick of things, and basically I had some great training. Dwayne, if you're out there, hope you're doing well, buddy. I had some great training by some people, but for the most part, it's like, all right, it's sink or swim time. Do your job. That's kind of like, I feel like, what Superman was going through in that first fight with General Zod. Like, he didn't know what he was supposed to be doing. He just knew that he had to try to stop this guy from destroying the city. And to his credit, he did, on multiple occasions, try to steer Zod away from the city, but Zod kept bringing it back. So, yes, I would have liked to have seen Superman probably save some people. However, this is a General Zod who wants to do nothing but destroy the planet. So every moment that Clark, Cal, Supes, whatever you want to call him, is saving a person instead of fighting General Zod, unless he's knocking him into the stratosphere every time, is someone else that General Zod more than likely would kill in that fight. So you can't really split your focus that way. So he's doing the best he can. And in regards to how they handled that controversy later on, which I think is not really a controversy at all, the only reason it didn't happen in the Avengers is because there was, like, what, six of them on that team? So you could divert people to going and saving other, like, civilians and stuff. Like, it's just Superman fighting Zod. There's no one else to be like, hey, go save these people. Like, it's not. But by the time you get to Dawn of Justice, they're like, let's take Doomsday to the abandoned, like, warehouse district or whatever. Which, yeah. I am 100% certain they put that line in there to shut people up from being like, you're endangering more people. So, yeah. And then by the time you get to Justice League, it's like, hey, we're in a, like, very small town in Russia. Most of the people are gone. Let's take this fight to this Russian nuclear reactor. And I'm like, this is weird. Mainly because, like, I appreciate them being like, okay, look, we're going out of our way to tell you people that there are either no or very few people here. But to me, at least, if the fight takes place near no civilians, the stakes aren't as big because there's no real danger of anybody getting hurt besides the heroes. And they're heroes because they put their lives on the line to save people. So,
right, I think all that's fair, and I also typically add, anytime that controversy came up, I don't understand the controversy, because people wanted a more, one of the knocks on Superman Returns was that Superman didn't throw a punch. He wasn't,
got beat up by Kumar.
He got beat up by Kumar. He wasn't violent enough, and that it was all very sanitized and very safe.
But
and,
he did push that island into space like a boss.
Yeah,
which doesn't make sense, so, because it was made out of
crap. Right. One of the knocks was that, and I thought that Zack Snyder was trying to address that.
Mm-hmm.
But also, it was realistic, and I just feel like, they had done their due diligence because they evacuated the buildings. Some people did get caught in the crossfire. I personally think that it was I did not think that this was incidental. Mm-hmm. I thought that there would be ramifications in that world for Superman's first introduction to the planet to be this violent episode where some people might blame him. And as we found out,
which is what
that turned out, that was the inciting incident.
That was literally Batman's entire reasoning for doing what he did in Dawn of Justice.
Right.
Like, you had a unseasoned Superman who was forced to fight someone equally as powerful, and it resulted in the deaths of quite a few people. And it leads to Batman thinking, okay, this guy is a problem.
Right.
What if he decides that he doesn't want to protect the people and he wants to turn on everybody?
Right.
We can't stop that, which is what how we get that wonderful line of, even if there's a 1% chance, we have to take that as an absolute certainty.
Right.
Which, that's some backwards logic.
That's right, the logic being used right now about the shutdown.
You were not wrong.
So, but no, I have one more question because we're running out of time. But I wanna bring this home. I agree with you. I think that the inciting incident of Batman versus Superman was the resolution of Man of Steel.
Yes.
So I think it was a story point. I think people are wrong. I love Man of Steel also. So I want to wrap this up with I would say we have about 5 minutes before we have to be headed off to a rehearsal.
Indeed.
So, what are your feelings about the now infamous Martha sequence towards the end of Dawn of Justice? And I know that 5 minutes we can do a whole podcast on Martha. But how do you feel about Martha? Do you think the internet got that one wrong? And if so, why do you think they got it wrong? Set them straight in 4.5 minutes.
I will do my best. Okay, so yes, I think they got it wrong. The internet got it wrong. But not out of like, I don't blame the internet entirely for getting it wrong. It's like I was telling you the other day. I think the Martha sequence, which I love, by the way, because I saw what they were going for, it could have been better, mainly from a filmmaking standpoint of whenever you see Bruce in Dawn of Justice and it goes back to his parents, it always like focuses more on his relationship with his dad. I think if they did the job better of showing how much Bruce's mom meant to him, and then also showing his dad doing everything he can to protect Martha, and then Thomas dying in the streets, and the last words he says are Martha, I think it would have been received a lot better. Because if they had done that, if you then have Bruce fighting Clark, and Clark, who is clearly about to die, going, save Martha, it does a better job of then driving home how much Bruce's mom meant to him, which would then snap him out of like the rage-fueled like beatdown he's in, which would then work better with the whole, why did you say that name? And then Lois going, it's his mother's name, which then does, I think, a better visual job of driving home that, oh, this isn't a bad guy. I'm about to kill this man, and the only thing he is thinking of is, please go save my mother. Which, I would argue, considering Bruce's entire argument that entire movie is that Clark isn't human, is one of the most human things that you could have done. Because I feel like if any of us were in a situation where, like, someone had kidnapped our mom, and all we were trying to do was get somebody to help us save her, and they weren't listening, and we realized that we were about to die, I think 9 times out of 10 people would, like, resign themselves to the fact they were going to die. But they would be pleading, it doesn't matter if you kill me, just make sure nothing happens to my mom. And I think they could have done a better job of showing that. All that being said, that's Monday morning quarterbacking it, and there could be countless reasons why they didn't do it that way. Time, money, actor schedules. There's a slew of reasons why it didn't happen that way.
Right.
So I think
filmmaking doesn't happen in the theater of every single fanboy's mind.
Exactly.
And I mean, you know, I agree with you. I think for me, the Martha scene is probably one of the best moments in any comic book movie ever.
Yes.
I agree the execution could have been a little bit better, but for me, I totally got it. And what I got from it was, in that moment, Bruce was able to not see Superman as an alien. He was able to see him as a scared child and who wished he could save his mother.
Yes.
Someone who was about to become an orphan. And in that moment, it not only humanized Clark, it humanized Superman for Batman, but it really drove home this whole point. It reminded Batman for the first time in years of why he donned the cape and cowl to begin with.
Yeah.
And it really...
Because by the time you see Batman in Dawn of Justice, he is a broken Batman.
Right.
Who has lost sight of what the mission is. Which you see early in the movie when he's branding criminals with the bat symbol. Like, that's not what Batman is about.
And I think for the first time in his life, I think because Bruce is a pretty smart guy, I think when he realizes that he was wrong about Superman, it is the first time in his life since his parents died that he felt hope.
Yes.
And I think that completely changed Batman's heart.
Yes.
It completely changed him, and it made him want to
Which
be
is why I
the
love
person
the Henry
that
Cavill
he can be,
Superman
the
so
best
much,
he can be.
Because the job of Superman is to inspire people to hope.
Yes.
And if you can inspire a emotionally and spiritually broken Batman to hope again, then that goes to show that you can inspire the world. Because you know this, I love Batman. But one of my biggest problems with Batman is that he is a very stubborn individual, which is why he butts heads with his friends and family so much. Because when Batman gets in his way of thinking, hell will usually freeze over before you change it. But in that moment, Batman is like, I was wrong about this person. He's a good person. He makes me think that I can be a better person, which is why you have that line at the end of Dawn of Justice when he's talking to Diana. He's like, I failed him, but I won't fail him again. Like, which I think is an amazing, scene.
The whole denouement of Dawn of Justice, I don't care what anybody says, is just terrific. It's fantastic. It's up there. The final 30 minutes is up there with the final, the final few images of The Dark Knight, which were just perfection. So,
have been weeping during those last 30 minutes.
Yeah, not gonna lie. Well, we will do this again sometime, Logan. I'm sure we'll talk about more things. Maybe we can come back and maybe tell you what. Why don't we plan a part two for this? And part two, we'll talk about what happened with Justice League. We'll talk about Zack's. But I think we need to do a part two of this discussion and talk about Justice League, Zack Snyder, the Snyder Cut, and all those
it's
sorts
happening.
Of things. It's happening. We're super excited about that. So I think, but we need to wrap it up here.
Yes. But yeah, I'd love to be back on if any of your listeners have any questions about comics and stuff. I'm quite knowledgeable about a lot of comic book things, not just Superman related. Send emails. I will do my best to answer them. And besides that, if you want to contact me, get in touch with Jake or just find me on Facebook. Logan Chase Fagan.
All right. Sounds good. Well, thanks for listening. We will be back at some point with another the other part of this discussion, and I will be back soon with more news headlines, more pop culture, and more history, more religion, all those sorts of things.
Can I have a reoccurring segment where I talk pop culture?
Yes.
Sweet.
I was thinking, I was actually thinking that maybe we would bring Deny That to Africa as a segment on the podcast. Just sort of bring it full circle.
Doesn't matter if they don't want me back now. We have it on tape.
Right. And maybe we can call our old friend Slurpee Guy and have him back. You'll learn the tale of Slurpee Guy in another episode. Thank you, friends, for listening. Thank you for your support. Like, comment, subscribe, share, whatever you do. And we will see you later. Stay safe out there.